accession number 18493, reel 25.
Mr. Lupton, reel 25.
Yes, we were at this place, Lake Bracciano. I'd been in charge of the tank up to then, and then I was moved from that position to looking after purchase of vegetables, fruit, eggs, and wine for the regiment, going around various farms and places where I could purchase these things. I always remember at Lake Bracciano they had the most beautiful peaches, which they pulled off trees that were about as big as pineapples. And that was when I first started on this. And I had one or two different men to go around with, and we got to some very isolated places going on our searches for these various bits of food. I also remember that was the first time when I saw broccoli. I thought it was some sort of unripe cauliflower when I first saw it. But anyway, that was a very interesting time, which I kept up until we finally pulled out of Italy altogether. And I quite enjoyed it. It was very interesting. There was just one thing. Somebody had a pet turkey. I don't know where he got it. And this thing used to walk around the camp area where we were. But every time a shell came over, it started gobbling like that, and till this thing had landed, and it was so annoying at night sometimes it had set off. Anyway, it was quite an interesting period then. The tanks carried on up. Well, they went eventually into Austria, but we had just about reached, a lot of us, reached the end of our overseas period, which was getting on for 5 years then, and came home eventually on a scheme called Python.
Before we get too far ahead, I'd like to just come back now to your active operations with your still with your tank. I gather that indirect fire from tanks is not the easiest job in the world. Could you explain exactly what went on whilst you were doing this indirect fire task?
Well, what we did was we got into a position which was ordered by the company commander or CO, depending on who gave the order there. And you got into position, and you were probably sheltered by a slight rise in the ground or something. And then you got orders from an OP, but they didn't come direct to you. They came to the company commander, who passed them on. Tank so-and-so, fire, you know, such an elevation, such a distance, and so on. And then they pass on to you the result. You couldn't see yourself. So it was, I suppose it must have been effective. Otherwise they wouldn't have done it. But it did mean that there was a slight delay between the order originally being given by the OP somewhere and you receiving it and acting on it. Mind you, could act on it immediately. You didn't have to wait. You had your gun already set up and sort of part way positioned. It didn't take an awful lot of positioning, and you could get your shot off pretty quickly. It, but as I say, you never saw, or scarcely ever saw, what you were aiming at and what how near you got to the target.
I can understand how you were given elevation. I mean, that presumably would have been worked out by somebody who knew about the ballistics. I mean, how were you given your line?
Well, you were when you were parked up in your firing position, you could give a reading of which direction you were facing directly forward, so that they could tell you how much movement you needed to make the officer commanding at our end could tell you where to aim at, in addition to the elevation.
Did you do this on a compass bearing?
It's on a compass bearing, yes. And of course, snag with compass bearings is that you can't get the infinitesimal degree which would really be necessary. So that was why it was, you had to wait until you were told how you'd lined up on the target and whether to move slightly for the next shot or two, until they told you to cease fire, and that was that. Yeah.
It sounded from something you said just then that individual tanks might be engaging, but I mean, were you not engaging by troop or by squadron?
Not necessarily, because, well, yes, I mean, you would put over a small barrage or whatever from the troop or from the squadron, depending on what the target was at the other end that you were aiming for. So that each would then need to, when the officer was giving the setting you needed, he would give it individually for each tank if you weren't facing in quite the same direction.
Oh, I see.
Because, you perhaps hadn't got a decent place to park up your tank in line. You'd be scattered.
Sounds like a slow business. You have to range each tank and then fire for effect.
Yes. Well, the tanks weren't far apart, but they could be in quite a different setting on the ground. So that that was the only division. I mean, you have a troop of tanks, three, or you'd have a squadron of tanks, ten or 11, depended, and they wouldn't be terribly far apart, but they could be in slightly different angles, so that each would be given a setting when the shoot started, and then would be given an idea of how all the shots landed, move up a bit more, or to one side or the other.
In this kind of work, obviously, there's very often direct fire tasks, such as taking out snipers and machine gun nests in buildings and OPs and that sort of thing. Did you ever get involved in any of that?
Yes, well, some of these were for that kind of work. And you had to do it before... you had to do it before the infantry went in, say, to remove these obstacles. And so you probably still couldn't see the actual target you were aiming at.
I was thinking of those occasions when you...
Oh, when you moved.
You know, yes. Somebody would say, right, that house over there, top window left, is that the kind of...
Yes, well, those we did have to do sometimes. Or somebody hiding behind a big house or something. Clear that out, yes. As you moved along the road or over the country, depending on the setting, that did happen on several occasions when you had to clear a certain point. Maybe they might have anti-tank gun, but it would only be a smaller one, not a big tank turret or tank. And on those occasions, yes, you had to go in and definitely clear some point. Depending on the target, it depended whether you used your main armament or the small arms.
You just said something about sometimes the anti-tank might be a tank turret. Did you mean that literally?
They did have some, yes, Tiger turrets and so on. Which they wouldn't dig the whole tank in, they just dug the turret in. They probably got them as turrets and dug them in on a facing position in a, say, not exactly a wall, but almost a wall, like at Monte Cassino, where they had a good view of the country round about, and nobody was going to hit them with anything that would do them any harm, because we didn't have such things to compete directly with 88 millimetres.
Did you ever directly come across one of these, or any of these?
Fortunately, no. No. They were in a few places on the Gothic line and one or two other special lines which they set up. More or less generally mounted in a position on the other side of a river or something like that. Partly well camouflaged, maybe some trees around about, but they'd apparently dug these in a good time before so that they had all the armament they needed, and the shells and all that kind of thing. And they also had some kind of electrical traverse, probably, to the... it was a turret with a floor in it, and so on.
But anyway, you personally didn't see...
No.
Right. Yeah. Going on now, then, to your rather fascinating move from driving around in the tank and giving and receiving an awful lot of lead to running around the countryside, buying up, becoming a fruiterer. How did that happen? I mean, what was the reason for the move? Well,
I'm rather ashamed to say. But I had had a very good time out with a few blokes in Rome. Rome was cleared then of Germans. And unfortunately, I apparently had a bit of trouble with some MPs. So I then became a corporal and was moved to A Squadron and in charge of this thing. Apparently, maybe they thought I shouldn't still have a tank. I don't know, but it made a very interesting move anyway.
How much of this trouble with the MPs do you remember?
I don't remember any, to tell you the truth. No. I just woke up in jail next morning. Somewhere in the middle of Rome, with every kind of villain you could imagine there. Military villains had turned to various kinds of deals they shouldn't be. I didn't know what the hell I was there for, but still, I was soon told.
Was this? Did this stay within the unit? Was the discipline carried out within the unit?
Yes, it was the new CO who downgraded me and said, due to my service and all the rest of it, he wouldn't do anything more. But downgraded to corporal and put in charge of this lot in A Squadron. So, well, it turned out to be very interesting. And I was, not sorry in a way to have it.
Almost a reward, I would have thought.
Yes, it was, just about.
So were you doing this for A Squadron or doing it for the whole of the
No, regiment? I was doing it for the whole of the battalion.
Although you were nominally in A Squadron?
Yes. I was just moved to A Squadron to, I don't know, so that I wasn't still, what would you say, trying to mislead any people in HQ Squadron or something. I don't know. But I did do the shopping, mainly for the whole unit. And it's extremely interesting going around all these farms and learning a bit of Italian as I went around because I had to.
So, who were you working to? The regimental quartermaster or RQMS?
Well, it was the RQMS, but yes, and I had an allowance, whatever it was, to go and buy so-and-so, and I did it as well as I could, and as cheaply as I could, let's say, so that unit funds didn't get too much depleted.
What were you using for money? Lira, or were you using the army?
We were using the army money. I think at that time the lira was 200 per pound sterling. It's now 2,700 or something, but. And it was only just before I left Italy that it went to 400. But we were using the military printed pound notes and, well, not printed by the military, but used by the military. So they could use them in any country they were in.
And how was this accepted by the locals? Did they like this or...?
Well, they didn't really like it, but they probably knew the way to get the best rate for it from somebody. Because the Italians are always good at that kind of thing. And occasionally they did like a bit of coffee or something like that instead. Because the only coffee they had was roast barley or something like that, which made into powder and tasted absolutely foul. And which, in the country places, they used to sweeten with honey to give it a bit of extra flavour. If you had a cup of coffee, you had this roast barley stuff and honey in it, which it made it not too bad. Our coffee was pretty foul anyway, but they seemed to think it was better than what they were getting. So occasionally you could help them out, you know, because they just liked a bit of extra, and they'd probably give you a bit of bonus in the fruit line or whatever it was, or eggs or whatever you were buying, which was a bit awkward, we found originally, when the word for eggs, I think, is uovo, and the word for grapes is uvo. But anyway, we soon got over that.
You say your coffee wasn't very good. Can you remember whose or what it was?
Just stuff that the cookhouse used to make us coffee.
Not branded,
no. No.
Was there anything else that you could barter?
Well, you could barter some cigarettes. V for Victory cigarettes, which were sweepings from somewhere and made in the form of cigarettes, and you used to get a 50 tin a week, I think it was, free issue. They liked them. Well, compared with some of the Italian cigarettes, I'm not surprised, as they were really foul. I'd first had those in when the Italians got captured in the early part in the desert. And they really did have some grim cigarettes. But anyway, those... Oh, and a spot of oil for sewing machines or whatever. It was literally only a few spots, you know, but they appreciated that because they couldn't get it. Especially not in some of the country areas.
So this is sort of engine oil, you know, the stuff that you
would... Yes, we didn't have any other oil, really. Not the thickest engine oil, but some of the other which are used for lubrication of other parts of the tank.
The instruments and that
oil,
sort of thing.
Yes.
What about petrol?
Well, some of the people I met in Rome prison were apparently doing a lot of that, and that was why they were in there. I don't know, sort of tank loads of this stuff. I don't know. We never had any occasion to give anybody any petrol.
So you said that you were buying fruit, and what other stuff did you get?
Well, vegetables of whatever kind were available at the in the season. As I say, broccoli and cabbages and various other things, potatoes too, beans. It depended when the season was, and fruits were various, mainly grapes, peaches, the occasional apple later on, pears too, and then, as I say, wine, which we used to buy by the big container tank, barrel, and whites or reds, it depended on what you thought was reasonable when you went around tasting, which was quite interesting. And you used to have some weird things. Even somebody tried to interest us once in fermenting wine. I mean, it was still bubbling in the vats, and no, we couldn't do that. It had a taste anyway. It's pretty weird stuff.
Didn't think you'd want more than one taste.
No. Oh, and a bit of vermouth occasionally too, we could find.
What about meat?
No, they never had any meat available. That came from some central area, delivered, you know, direct from the butchery, wherever it was, to the cookhouse, or to the quartermaster, and then the cookhouse, or cookery, whatever it was.
I mean, was this fruit and vegetable readily available? I'm just wondering. I mean, you're obviously buying in rare areas where a war had just passed over them. I'm just wondering how much of it was ready there for.
There seemed to be quite a bit, but of course, some of these towns or villages or even odd farms on their own. Would be out of easy contact because with other places where they could have sold their produce, because there was very little wheeled traffic of Italian origin moving around. They didn't have much petrol, oil or anything else. And with the war having gone on, probably all the petrol or whatever that there was had been taken by the Germans already anyway. So there really wasn't anything in the way of traffic, and therefore they were only too glad to have somewhere to sell the stuff they'd grown. Otherwise it just sort of rotted and couldn't be used.
And of course it was the right time of year. We're looking here at June, July and August, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, well, I started on this in August, September, October.
That's even better.
Even better, yes, in those things.
And the weather at this time of was fairly bad, was it? I remember you saying the weather went very bad at one point.
Not until about, I think it was about the middle of September when the weather went really bad. You're liable to get nearly bogged down with rain, you know. Once it started, it really melted down. Earlier on, we hadn't had any rain at all, I don't think, during the period from May to September. Well, in the parts we were in anyway, gradually moving further north. But I do remember once we parked up, and I was then in A squadron in a wheeled vehicle, and there was a threat of some push by the Germans coming down, and we'd got into a trench which was already there, and it poured with rain overnight, and this was a ditch, not a trench, and the water came swilling down there, sort of woken up with it washing your armpits and all the rest of it. And nearly all my photographs and everything else were completely ruined because I'd had them with me. The negatives, they most of them ruined. And it really was, from then on, it was pretty boggy everywhere, you know. And